तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamani by the seer philosopher Shankara. And we have been considering the reasoning process. You see, there are three steps according to what is known as the path of knowledge or Jnana Yoga. First, you have to hear about the truth from one who has attained, who has realized that truth. Next, you have to reason upon what you hear. And then again, lastly, you must meditate upon that truth and you must realize it. You see, there is no theory or belief in it, but it is an experience. And the experience is, what is mentioned here, is the highest, the supreme. What you have to hear is what we call Mahavakya, the sacred truth. And what is that sacred truth? That thou art, or I am Brahman. You hear this truth first, but then as you hear this truth, the knowledge, the experience does not come. And the understanding also does not come, because you may consider when you hear this truth, I am Brahman, this empirical self which you consider as yourself, as Brahman. But it is not. So you have to reason upon this truth in order that you can understand. And this reasoning process is the process of analysis. Lastly, you have to meditate and meditate and meditate until that truth becomes revealed to you. Now, before I come to our study, a thought just came to me that this is the process of Jnana Yoga, or it is the path of non-dualism. And the attainment, the experience, is the non-dualistic experience. That is, I am Brahman. I and my Father are one. But a dualist, when he is worshipping God, as he and God separate, he also has to consider and understand that this God that he is worshipping is not outside of himself. And this has been emphasized throughout by every great teacher of the world. That the God you are seeking, the reality that you are trying to find, is not somewhere outside of yourself, but is within. You see, Christ had taught, the kingdom of heaven is within. My master at one time emphatically impressed upon me this truth. He said, pointing to his heart, he said, "He who has found him here will find him everywhere. And if you don't find him here, you will not find him anywhere." And whether you are meditating upon a personal God or upon the impersonal truth makes no difference. You will have come to this understanding, not understanding merely, a conviction that comes to you. You see, now you hear about the truth. Then as you meditate upon it, whether as a dualist or as a non-dualist, you have to come to this conviction that what I am seeking is already within me. Now again, what is it I am seeking? What is it everybody is seeking? Plainly stated in the Upanishads, that which is eternal amongst the non-eternals of life, that which is the highest abiding joy in the midst of the pleasures of life, that is the point, and that is the test. When you go to analyze, or when any craving or desire comes, analyze. Is it something that is abiding? Is it something that is eternal? That is the test. And you see, when we are seeking pleasures, for instance, in the sense world, we get deluded with this thought that this is going to last. This is something that is eternal, that is abiding. But there we have to have the analyze. We have to analyze and seek for that which is eternal, which is not fleeting. And if you discriminate and analyze, you will find that there is one truth in this whole universe that is abiding and eternal. Call that God or Brahman or Atman or reality or Christ or Buddha or whatever you may give the name, makes no difference. And in this process, first you hear that I am Brahman, that thou art. Now the question is, what is that I? Then, first you consider this body. We are identifying ourselves with this body. And then we realize that this is so impermanent, so it is not. And in that way, it is pointed out that there are five sheaths covering the Atman. The physical sheath, then the sheath called the vital energy, which expresses as breath or breathing, the life principle, what we call. Then the next sheath is manas or mind. Next sheath is intellect and ego. These are the five sheaths. Now we have considered up to manas, the mind, and how it has been pointed out that none of these seeds can be Atman. Now we are going to consider the seed called the seed of intellect. Now of course, here again let me point out, in Western psychology, it is the mind that is everything. Mind is that which is, which knows, feels, wills, thinks, does, act. You see? But, and discriminates. That is the, all the functions that goes, go on. They have, just the mind alone has all the functions according to the Western psychology. In the Indian psychology, we find a distinction made, but of course not vastly different. That is, it really does not make much difference. For instance, it says there is manas, mind, then buddhi, intellect, and aham, ego. These three comprise chitta, which has been translated as mind stuff. But of course it doesn't have any sense in English when we say mind stuff. But this is how they distinguish. Suppose I see an object, the senses go out, gathers the sensation, and presents it to the mind, manas. Then manas presents it to the buddhi, that intellectual faculty, discriminating faculty. And the buddhi, the intellectual faculty, discriminates, classifies, distinguishes. All this happens simultaneously in a way and in an instant, in an instance. For instance, I see this desk. And the buddhi immediately says, this is desk and not this pillar. And then again this buddhi presents it to the ego, I see this. So these different functions. But in order that we can follow, we can just consider all this as mind according to the Western psychology. Now we have considered mind in one aspect. How mind is the cause of bondage and mind is the cause of freedom. It is in the mind that there is the delusion, and it is purified mind again that brings that vision of reality. Now you are going to consider the discriminating faculty, which is called the sheath or covering of intellect. The discriminating faculty with its power of intelligence, together with the organs of perception, is known as the covering of intellect. To be the doer is its distinguishing characteristic. I see this, I do this, I think this way. It is the cause of man's birth, death and rebirth. Why? That is, this still in ignorance. When I say, I do this, I think this, I act, not the Atma. But it is the sense of ego which has arisen because of our ignorance, identification of the Atman with the intellect, with the mind. The power of intelligence, that is in the covering of intellect, is a reflection of the Atman, the pure consciousness. You see, here again there is a big difference, and this is a real difference between Western psychology and Indian psychology. You see, this intelligence, or that the mind is conscious, according to the Western psychology, consciousness is the property of the mind. Whereas Indian psychology says, no. Consciousness is identical with Atman. Atman is pure consciousness. Doesn't say even that it is the property. It's identical. Same. Atman means pure consciousness. Pure consciousness again means pure bliss. Pure bliss again means pure love. And which means also unchangeable reality, immortal life. So pure consciousness has all that connotation. Now again, this pure consciousness reflecting on the intellect, or for our better understanding, mind, makes the mind intelligent, makes the mind think, makes the mind act, makes the mind perceive, through the senses, of course. But it's a borrowed light from the Atman. Now again, from another standpoint, try to think this way. How God is within us, Brahman is within us, and it is His reflection upon the mind helps me to think, to perceive, to act. And yet, you see, I say, I think, I act, I do. Whereas, these are only instruments. Brahman, if Brahman does not reflect or shine, then you can't do a thing. That's called death. So this pure, this intelligence that we have, this awareness that we have, is not the intelligence of the mind, not the awareness of the mind, not the property of the mind. Now again, why not? You see, if mind's property had been consciousness or intelligence, it will remain conscious and intelligent always. But we know it does not remain conscious and intelligent always. We become dull, our mind becomes dull. Or we become unconscious. There is no consciousness in the mind, in deep sleep, for instance. But there is the pure consciousness of the Atman. When we wake up, we know we had a deep sleep. What wonderful rest I had. How do you know? So this consciousness of the mind is a borrowed consciousness. It is like this iron ball near the fire. It is hot. But take it away from the fire, it cools off. The covering of intellect is an effect of Maya, that is of Prakriti. It possesses the faculty of knowing and acting. It always, that is, it does function that way. But it's the power is coming from the Atman. It always identifies itself entirely with the body, sense organs, etc. It has no beginning. It has no beginning because, you see, this whole Prakriti, the whole Maya, has no beginning. The whole ignorance that we have had has no beginning from a beginningless time. Now, here is again a difference between Christian theology and this Vedantic ideal. For instance, in the Christian theology, you have this idea that original man was pure. Adam was pure to begin with. But then, you see, he was made in the image of God. And then Eve, you know, tempted Adam. And there was the fall of Adam. So he was pure to begin with, but he fell down from that purity. And of course, all the blame goes to the woman, to Eve. And then again, through the intervention of Christ, he becomes pure again. This theory. But you see, here is the point. All right, today again you attain purity. Tomorrow again another Eve might tempt you and you are falling again. What about that? So from a beginningless time, the ignorance is there. Then we'll find very interesting discussion, you know, will arise. How is it that if it is from a beginningless time, how can it end at all? It should be endless also, you see, this question the disciple will ask. But we shall come to that later. It has no beginning. It is characterized by its sense of ego. It constitutes the individual man, its empirical self. It's the initiator of all actions and undertakings, impelled by the tendencies and impressions formed in previous births. It performs virtuous or sinful actions and experiences their results. Of course, here is the law of karma again. You see, this is not the first birth. From a beginningless time we have existed. And so we have accumulated, we have done good deeds, bad deeds, and the impressions are there. And according to the impressions, good or bad, our tendencies have been created in this life. And so again you find some are good, some are bad, some become spiritual, some want liberation, others don't care for God. You see, different classes of people according to the karmas. It gathers experience by wandering through many wombs of higher or lower degree. The states of waking and dream belong to this covering of intellect. It experiences joy and sorrow. Because of the sense of I and mine, it constantly identifies itself with the body and the physical states and with the duties pertaining to the different stages and orders of life. This covering of intellect shines with a bright light because of its proximity to the shining Atman, because that's the nearest to the Atman. It's a garment of the Atman. But man identifies himself with it and wanders around the circle of birth, death and rebirth because of his delusion. But you see, who really goes through birth, death and rebirth? Not the Atman. Atman is unborn and undying. You know, it's very interesting. An illustration has been given by Swamiji, very beautiful illustration. You see, you are reading a book, page after page. You see, book is changing, not you. So, birth, death, rebirth, in nature. The Atman is the witness. Atman is neither born nor does that die. And this is an experience that has to come. You see, this ignorance is not in the Atman. Atman is ever free, pure, perfect, always, God within you. And by the actions of the body and mind and senses, the God within you does not become affected. Remains pure. Then, how is the law of karma? When you identify, because Atman identifying with the mind, body, senses, etc., creating this sense of ego, and with this sense of ego, I feel I do it, good or bad, and accordingly I suffer or I enjoy. But take away this ego. Identify yourself with the Atman. There's no karma, no law of karma affecting you. That's liberation. That's freedom. And then again, you see, this liberation is not that something you earn or comes to you. You are not liberated. You are already liberated. You see, only you have to be just aware, to be conscious of that. And go for that, to become conscious of that, of course you have to go through spiritual disciplines. The Atman, which is pure consciousness, is the light that shines in the shrine of the heart, the center of all vital force. It's immutable, but it becomes the doer and experiencer when it is mistakenly identified with the covering of intellect. The Atman assumes the limitations of the covering of intellect because it is mistakenly identified with the covering, which is totally different from itself. Thus man, who is the Atman, regards himself as being separate from it. You see, we all think ourselves separate from God and from Brahman, who is the one Atman in all creatures. An ignorant man likewise may regard a jar as being different from the clay of which it was made. That is, your true being, the real man, is one with Brahma, always, forever. By its nature, the Atman is forever unchanging and perfect, you see. But it appears, having the character and nature of its coverings, because it is mistakenly identified with them. Although fire is formless, it will assume the form of red hot iron. The disciple, either because of delusion or for some other reason, the Atman appears to be the individual self. This mistaken identification had no beginning. And that which had no beginning cannot have an end either. Therefore, this mistake about the individual soul's identity must be eternal. And its wanderings through birth, death and rebirth must continue forever. Then how can there be any liberation? Master, kindly explain this to me. The Master, your question is to the point, O prudent one. Listen to me attentively. Something which has been conjured up by delusion and only exists in your imagination can never be accepted as a fact. You see, he asked that question because he took this ignorance, this bondage as a fact. But it's not a fact. It is the conjuring of your own mind, your own imagination. The Atman has never been bound, always free, eternally free and eternally unchangeable reality, blissful, immortal bliss, pure consciousness. And then through our imagination we consider ourselves mortal human beings, subject to this or subject to that. We shall proceed later. Any questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced. due to their being off mic during the original recording. Do I understand that we achieve the realization of the Atman by peeling off these different layers?
No, you don't peel off the body. No. No, I wish it could have been done, you see. So for supposing you are putting five garments and then take off one by one and then you are free. No, it is not that easy. You see, where is this attachment? To these sheaths. I am attached to the body. You see, I think I am the body. It is my imagination, my thinking process. But even if I think, you know, that I am not the body, I am not the mind, even by such thinking process also, we can't get rid of this identity. Because you may say, I am not the body, but let me take a pin and give you a... You see? So it's a matter of experience. In your consciousness, when you realize the Atman as Atman, you see, and that is done in Samadhi. I'll give you an illustration. A disciple of Ramakrishna, he had carbuncle on his back. The surgeon comes and he wants to put him under anesthetic. He says, oh, no, no. You don't have to. You go ahead. And then he was talking to the disciples, smiling, discoursing, and the surgeon went on operating. He detached his consciousness from the body. He had that power. He acquired that power through spiritual disciplines. And then you know what happened. The same Swami and the same surgeon, you see, Swami had a little boil on his toe. And he was just like a child. Oh, no, 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 I don't want to be operated. Oh, no. And so the surgeon thought that he would come to prostrate before him, and he brought a knife. And as he prostrated before him, instead of touching his toe, and Swami cried out. Then the surgeon said, wow, I've done a mistake, but I thought you could bear all that. He said, you see, I have to prepare myself for it. I had to detach myself from the body consciousness. You didn't give me any time to do that. And in order that, again, the illumined soul, the perfect man again can work, can teach, he has to have the body consciousness. You see?
Where does personality fit into this?
Well, first you have to understand when the tea master says, you are Brahman. What is that you? Is it the body? Is it the mind? Is it the intellect? Is it the ego? You see? You analyze like that. Then you realize none of these. But you have not yet realized it. Next step is you have to meditate. You see? And discriminate and meditate. Desires arise in the mind, discriminate. No. These are not lasting. You see? I must devote myself to that which is eternal. That is a reasoning and analysis process. But real experience is something that we have to have by transcending.
Are these steps a normal unfolding of our physical and mental layers of consciousness? Is it consciousness?
Yes, it is consciousness, of course. I think William James said broadening of consciousness or something like that. Expansion of consciousness, he said. So it is true, it's an expansion of consciousness. It's an unfoldment of consciousness. And transcending the body and the senses. You see?
At will.
Through disciplines, you can't do, I can't do at will, unless I go through disciplines, unless I've attained that state. See, you cannot do at will, no. But only one can do at will, only when he has attained that. Then he comes back again to this consciousness, yes. But at will, then he can transcend this limited consciousness. Ask something.
Is it possible to be dualistic and non-dualistic at the same time?
Yes, in a way. That's true. Because the moment you are trying to meditate, you are a dualist. Non-dualism really is a matter of experience.
This has been difficult for me because in Christian upbringing, you were taught to worship a father figure.
Very good. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
But that father figure, again, please understand that he is not way out, hanging in the sky. It is right within the shrine of your heart.
Now I need to ask where the mother figure is.
All right, any aspect, his father, his mother, his friend, you see, he's everything. Find him within, yes.
Is a dualistic approach a necessary preliminary to a non-dualistic approach?
Well, you see, there's no such thing as non-dualistic approach. Non-dualism is really a matter of experience. But as long as there is a meditator and an object of meditation, it is dualism.
Swami, you mentioned the ego.
Yes.
Yes. Now, the ego, is it the part of you that says, I am doing all this, but the Atman, when it is experienced, is it a conscious awareness that you yourself are nothing?
Ego means I. This ego, this I, is an apparent I. It's not the real I. And as long as there is this illusory I, which we hold on as real, so long we have troubles. And as there is a saying of Sri Ramakrishna, when this I dies, then all troubles cease.
Then is this what Jesus meant when he said, I myself can do nothing?
Yeah, you see, that is an attitude that a devotee takes. Because as long as we have the sense and consciousness of this ego, empirical self, the best thing is to give it back to the Atman, or call it God or Lord, or father or mother, whatever you may call. Those are different names, but expressing the same reality. Now, for instance, Ramakrishna used to say, you know, in his ordinary consciousness, I am the instrument, thou art the operator. You see? I am not the doer. I am the instrument. Thou art the operator. I am the house. Thou art the dweller in the house. You see, this body is the house. So I am the house as long as I consider this body. But thou art the dweller in this house. You see, that attitude is very good. And that is the attitude that Jesus had. And then again that same Jesus said, I and my Father are one. And same way, you also have to realize, I and my Father are one. And that same way, everyone will ultimately realize. Then there is no worship, no worshipper. You see? As my master one time told me, when I am in that mood and I see God playing in so many masks, in other words, when I see Brahman everywhere, he said, how can Brahman teach Brahman? How can I teach anybody? You see, a teacher, in order to teach, has to come down again. So he said, then again I come down from that. And then I see your mistakes and I correct you.
Swami, how can you tell whether it is your heart telling you something or the intellect telling you? How do you know which is God?
Which is God? Neither the heart nor the intellect.
But they say, let your heart rule, and that's God.
Yeah, you listen to your heart. You see, where it is always good to have the heart and intellect harmonize. But when the conflict there is between the heart and the intellect, follow the heart. You see. Now, how do you make the distinction? That is something you have to make that distinction. I can make it for myself. I can say, this I feel in my heart, but my intellect says no. You see? So that is individual feeling and experience.
That is where the mind tricks you.
Oh, sure, mind is tricking us all the time. It's a rascal mind unless it becomes purified. Mind is tricking, rationalizing and all kinds of things, you see. But to a sincere aspirant, mind does not trick at all. He knows.
Is meditation japam, or is there another form of meditation where you take a thought and taking an idea and wanting to follow it through to a conclusion? Can that really be meditation?
Well, that may be meditation in the English sense, in, as the word may mean that. But you see, we do not have any English equivalent word to express what we call dhyana. But I'll give you the illustration. You see, dharana, or what we call concentration, you are pinpointing your mind upon an object. But it doesn't stay. You are practicing again, again, again. But then when the mind flows continuously upon one, upon your thought of God, upon your thought of the Atman, then that will be called dhyana, and we call that meditation or contemplation, or whatever you may say in English. But we try to express that way. But it's a continuous flow of thought upon one. And that has to be Atman, Brahman, God. You see, now for instance, there is that light. Continuously, the current is coming
That's why it looks steady. If that continuity is broken, it will flicker. Or the light of a lamp protected from the wind, steady, no distraction. That is the simile of meditation. And japam is a help to meditation. When you use the word om, for instance, that signifies Brahman. And with the help of the word, you are meditating on Brahman. For instance, when I say John, well, John, as I know him, comes to my mind. You see? So the name helps me to think of the person.
But sometimes when you talk to us, you say you must meditate upon this. But when you take this idea you put out and think on it, other things come into...
Oh, sure. Otherwise you'd be absorbed in samadhi. You see, meditation is next to samadhi. When you can keep your mind undistracted, and there is a continuous flow, and if it happens for 20 minutes or 22 minutes, you'll attain samadhi. You see, it's so easy. In half an hour, you achieve everything. Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahavīryaṁ Karavāvahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mā Vidvishāvahai. Om. May Brahman protect us. May He guide us. May He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.